This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lake, station KUWS. Yes, it's 6 o'clock Central Standard Time, Thursday, November 22nd, 1945. This is Jack McKenna wishing you a very happy Thanksgiving. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news. Rapid Ray has the sports. We've got some great new music, and we're looking for an invitation to your Thanksgiving dinner.
Openly begging for Thanksgiving dinner is a little brassy, even for you.
Us. Begging for us. Get it? You don't have a place to go either. And neither of us can cook, so I thought we'd give it a shot. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by SNL Toyland with Chinese checker sets for just 98 cents. And a happy Thanksgiving, Lou.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jack, and good listeners. Hearings into the attack on Pearl Harbor continue to question admirals. A white, chilly day greets the first peacetime Thanksgiving in Upper Wisconsin. And the Nazis' own documents are used as evidence in the war crimes trial. We begin our World Shortwave Report from Nuremberg.
This is Nuremberg, Germany. Stan Turner at the Palace of Justice. A mounting pile of documents ranging from intimate diaries of leading Nazis to carefully worded secret plans of the German High Command was placed before the International Tribunal today as the prosecution moved to convict 20 of Hitler's highest aides as war criminals. As the session opened, the four-power court ruled that Jew baiter Julius Streicher is sane and must stand trial and denied a defense motion which asked postponement of the trial of Martin Bormann, Hitler's missing deputy, who's being tried in absentia. Former Nazi police chief Ernst Kaltenbrunner is unable to appear in the trial because of a cranial hemorrhage. He's described today as slightly improved after getting the new drug penicillin. He was in serious condition yesterday. For the first time since the trial opened 2 days ago, the accused German leaders appeared in high spirits, smiling all the time. Reich Marshal Hermann Göring chatted animatedly with defense counsel. Rudolf Hess, who has had only a vacant stare throughout most of the proceedings, laughed for the first time as he talked with former Foreign Minister Joachim von Ribbentrop. Even Stern High Command General William Keitel and Alfred Jodl were smiling. Several hundred Reich documents selected from more than 2,500 amassed by U.S. investigators will outline in the Germans' own words the scheming and aggression by which Hitler and his henchmen led the world into war, declared Assistant U.S. Prosecutor Robert Story of Dallas, Texas. The vital documents were seized by Army intelligence teams. They ranged from Nazi philosopher Alfred Rosenberg's diary to letters discovered behind a false wall in a Bavarian castle to top-secret Luftwaffe records secreted in Hitler's Alpine redoubt. Story told the court others came from salt mines and buried caches. The prisoners arrived before the court convened promptly at 10 a.m. They gazed at the large white screen at the end of the courtroom, upon which the prosecution intends to project motion pictures of Nazism in its heyday. More evidence against the German leaders. Chief U.S. Prosecutor Justice Robert Jackson reminded the court that the fate of thousands of more Nazis in Allied hands depended on the outcome of the trial. Prisoners such as SS men, the Gestapo, the German General Staff, the Nazi cabinet, and others in Nazi-dominated organizations. There was some indication that Hitler's henchmen were beginning to understand the true significance of the world's abhorrence of Nazism and its works. This appeared evident in the declaration of the attorney for Hans Fritzsche, the one-time deputy to propaganda minister Paul Joseph Goebbels. He was ready to, quoting now, acknowledge moral guilt for having placed his energies at the disposal of the Nazi regime, unquote. His counsel says Fritzsche reached this conclusion after learning, quote, all about the concentration camps and other evidence produced, unquote. But Fritzsche did not consider himself criminally guilty because he was, quoting counsel again, carrying out orders. In Nuremberg, this is Stan Turner calling the states. Come in, Alfred M. Schock.
This is Texas. Correspondent Alfred M. Schock reporting in San Antonio. Bemedaled veteran of two wars, Lieutenant General Alexander Hatch lost his battle for life Wednesday night. The 55-year-old Hatch led the victorious drive of the U.S. 7th Army across France and Germany. The high-tempered, slim, six-footer sandy patch to his men triumphed in the Pacific Theater as well as on the European continent. He died of pneumonia at Brook General Hospital here after entering the hospital just 8 days ago. Preceding him in death is a general's son, a member of the 1st Army in France, who was killed October 22, 1944. The colorful career of Sandy Patch climaxed in Europe. Placed in command of the 7th Army March 1, 1944, he trained the Army for amphibious operations and led it when it hit the beaches of southern France August 15, 1944. In 3 months, the 7th drove the Germans back almost 600 miles. The smashing drive made General Patch the first Army commander to successfully pierce the natural frontier formed by mountains. Patch handled the final mopping up of the Japanese on Guadalcanal late in 1942, moving in with Army troops to relieve the Marines. Previously, he had commanded troops in New Caledonia. For his work at Guadalcanal, he was awarded the Navy's Distinguished Service Medal. In San Antonio, this is Alfred M. Schock reporting. Calling Washington. Come in, Jack Bell.
This is the nation's capital, Jack Bell, Associated Press. A Democratic senator from Illinois is asking why there were no Hawaiian plane patrols in the year leading up to the attack on Pearl Harbor. As a member of the House Senate Committee investigating the disaster at Pearl Harbor, Senator Lucas told reporters that they had daily reconnaissance flights of 300 miles in 1940. Why wasn't that in effect in 1941? Admiral J.O. Richardson testified earlier that he started the daily patrols in June of 1940 when the Army ordered Hawaii on alert, but called off the patrols in December. His successor, Admiral Husband Kimmel, never restarted the patrols when he took over command in early 1941. The committee didn't meet today because of the Thanksgiving holiday. It may have to delay Lucas' questions because former Secretary of State Cordell Hull will testify tomorrow on the diplomatic side of the disaster. Mr. Hull is in failing health and can only appear for 45 minutes at a time. Former Undersecretary Sumner Wells and former Ambassador to Japan Joseph Grew will also testify. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is Arthur Brisbane in the nation's capital. Here's some great news for the holidays. All meat rationing will end on Saturday. At the same time, all food fats like butter, margarine, shortening, and lard will become point-free. Secretary of Agriculture Anderson will make that announcement tomorrow. Sugar is now the only food left on the rationing list. Since September 30th, about a third of the meat has been ration-free. That included the lower grades of beef, veal, and lamb. Only choice cuts and all pork remained rationed. This will bring to an end the meat and fat rationing, which began March 29, 1943. Secretary Anderson says there is no immediate prospect of lifting the sugar rationing, so the Office of Price Administration cautions people to hang on to ration book number 4 for sugar. The secretary also says the end of rationing will in no way affect the food we're sending to our troops, allies, and liberated countries. In Washington, this is Arthur Brisbane.
The number of strike-idled Americans soared to almost 500,000 workers. The most serious of work stoppages was the strike against General Motors, keeping 175,000 employees off the job. The United States, dedicated to peace, is still making atom bombs, according to President Truman today. He says they're making A-bombs for experimental purposes. Wyoming Senator Joseph O'Mahony objected, saying we don't need any more experiments in destruction. Admiral William Bull Halsey relinquished command of the powerful Third Fleet today when he hauled down his four-star flag on board the USS South Dakota. Rear Admiral Howard Kingman will take his two-star flag from the USS Wisconsin, Kingman's ship, while he commanded the Pacific Battleship Division. The 62-year-old Halsey is retiring at the end of the year. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:10. Jack McKenna has this message from our sponsor.
Good luck, Admiral Halsey. Men like that seem to come from nowhere when we need them, and then they just fade away.
That's pretty profound.
Oh, I've got a few profoundians. And now let's look at some profound deals from SNL Toyland. Dolly's, oh, look at this, girls, Dolly's Bio Cradle for just $2.39. It's a constructive toy that's only for the girls.
Well, I don't know. If a boy wants to use it, he can.
Revolver and holster for you kids who want to play a cowboy, just 59 cents. Yes, 59 cents for a plastic revolver and a leatherette holster. Boy, oh boy, can you have fun with that. A basket weaving set. This is for Lou Martin. 98 cents. Assorted colored reeds and slates for plaque and basket weaving. Oh, boy. And here's a Chinese checker set, and they're a lot of fun to play on those rainy nights. Board complete with marbles and instructions. That's Toyland at SNL in Superior.
Two of America's greatest aviators teamed up to shoot down Japanese fighter planes in the Pacific. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has that story.
The story has remained a secret for more than a year, Lou. Only now, a United Press story from reporter William Dickinson reveals that none other than Charles Lindbergh and Ace of Aces Richard Bong were on a mission together when the Lone Eagle shot down a Jap Zero over Borneo. Lucky Lindy was in the southeastern Pacific as a civilian attached to the Army Air Force to teach long-range flying. Apparently, he knew some cruising and gas mileage tricks to double the range of P-38 Lightning fighter planes. On a combat mission October 10, 1944, the pair was over the Balikpapan oil fields. Then the 42-year-old Lone Eagle, who thrilled the world when he crossed the Atlantic in 1927, shot down the Zero. After that, Air Corps Commander General George Kinney ordered the Lone Eagle not to make any more combat runs. And by the way, Lou, Major Bong bagged his 29th and 30th zeros on that mission. And as if that wasn't enough, second-ranking ace Major Thomas McGuire of Ridgefield, New Jersey, was along in that formation of 30 American fighters. McGuire was killed in the Philippines, strafing a Jap destroyer in the Philippines. Both Bong and McGuire told reporter Dickinson that Lucky Lindy was a hotshot fighter pilot, and he would have knocked out Japs every mission if Kinney had let him.
Thanks, Mike. The carrier Joliet is discharging a load of coal at the Washburn docks and will head to Ashland's northwestern docks for a load of iron ore. The Joliet is the last ship of the season for Washburn and Ashland. For the first time since before the war, Ashland will decorate its main street with lighting. The Ashland Chamber of Commerce says it will resume the Yuletide tradition of putting evergreen arches with lights that will cross 2nd Street and the entire business district. The Star of the East will be hung at the Sioux Docks on 2nd Street. Except for a few church services and lodge doings, this first peacetime Thanksgiving has been a quiet one. Ice and snow and slippery roads have kept traffic down. Of course, the best thing this Thanksgiving is that many servicemen were home for the first time since leaving for the war, Jack.
Welcome home, guys, and you gals, too, for that matter. And Mom and Dad, it must be great having those empty spots at the table occupied again. And for those still awaiting homecomings or those who have given the ultimate sacrifice, you're in our thoughts and prayers this Thanksgiving.
Again, you're being uncharacteristically profound.
Quit sounding so surprised. I'm not shallow, except when it comes to turkey and dressing and all the fixings, which we may not get since Harriet's out of town with her family and we're here to fend for ourselves.
Now, that's more in character.
Where is Harriet, anyway?
She's with her mother in Menominee.
Menominee, do-do-do-do-do-do. Menominee, do-do-do-do-do. That's a town with a ring to it. Now our forecast for this Thanksgiving Day, November the 22nd, 1945. Colder tonight with a low of just 22 degrees. Then some light snow tomorrow and a high of 32. It's music time, friends. Let's kick it off with this new one from the 1945 hit parade. Let's swing and sway with Sammy Kay and the Cadets with A Room Full of Roses on the Martin and McKenna Getting Hungry show.
If I said a rose to you for every time you made me blue, you'd have a room
Sammy Kay with vocals by Don Cornell and A Room Full of Roses on KUWS. Friends, enjoy a genuine old-time Thanksgiving dinner with all the trimmings at Hotel Superior. They're serving until 9 o'clock, and it's just $1.50 per person at Hotel Superior. What do you think, Lou?
Either there or Bertha's Tavern. I hear Bill Gambeski's band is playing tonight.
It isn't the same thing, you know. Home and hearth and stuff.
You mean stuffing. Look, I've been around you long enough to know that these things always work out. And since I'm here, I get to tag along.
Right. Back to the music, folks. Here's another new one from the 1945 Hit Parade. This is Deanna Durbin, and Always on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Always, that's when I'll be.
Deanna Durbin, and always on station KUWS. Hiya, Ray. What's cooking for Thanksgiving dinner, old buddy, old pal?
You're so friendly. I'm not doing any better than you and Lou. My people are all out of town visiting my sister in Saskatoon.
You got a sister in Saskatoon? Is that like a gal in Kalamazoo?
It might as well be. My only shot at getting turkey tonight is at the Black Cat, where they feature a dried-up turkey roll. Well, happy Turkey Day, sports fans. A big football game is underway at this hour in Detroit as the Lions host the Cleveland Rams. The only thing on the line is the Western Division National League title. That's all. The Rams are seeking their first championship and are favored largely because of the strong arm of a rookie quarterback Bob Waterfield. Now, these are tense days at Indiana. Professors will kindly excuse students if they seem slightly less attentive. For after 47 years of trying, the football Hoosiers are on the threshold of their first Western Conference title. No one in Bloomington dreamed of such a famine when Indiana entered the Big Ten party in 1899, but Coach Bo McMullen hopes today's tilt against the tough Purdue Boilermakers will complete their first unbeaten season. Minnesota's football coach Bernie Bierman says he's not quitting. Before the war, Bierman led his Gophers to a remarkable 5 undefeated seasons. But this year, his first since spending 3 years in the service of Uncle Sam, the Gophers are 4-4. And 135,000 Nimrods are expected to take to the woods of Wisconsin this weekend for the 5-day deer hunting season. The State Conservation Department expects only 400 of those hunters to come from out of state. The Douglas County Fish and Game League is asking for your help. Claims that deer are getting smaller in northern Wisconsin have the league trying to figure out if it's true or not. So they want hunters to drop them a penny postcard with information on their kill this year. Send it to Fritz Hines at the county courthouse, fellas. Okay, this is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport.
Turkey roll, huh?
Yeah, afraid so.
Here's the fine sound of Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra with vocals by Teddy Waters and Dream on the Martin and McKenna No Gobble Gobble Show.
They seem so dreamy. never are as bad as they seem. So dream and dream.
Jimmy Dorsey and the favorite of young lovers, Dream, on station KUWS. Hey, hiya, Lou.
I'd like to introduce a new feature. I call it Taxi Talk with Mr. Bob Curtis of Checker Cab. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Turkey Day to you as well. Man, that wind and snow is really kicking up out there. Makes it rough sledding for us cabbies, I tells you.
What's going on here? Lou, you hate these kind of features.
My car wouldn't start, so I took a cab to work. We got to talking, and bingo, here we are.
Taxi talk?
It was either that or cabby kibitzing.
Hey, taxi talk. Now that's smooth, catchy, you know? Anywho, I figure we cabbies are overlooked and underappreciated. Think of it. Who's the first person a visitor often sees when coming to Superior, huh?
The guy at the gas station with the restroom key?
It's guys like me. We pick them up at a train depot, or a ship in port, or the bus terminal, and we takes them to where they want to go. That makes us important. We's the first impression people gets of our fair city.
Let's hope the visitor isn't going to a grammar convention.
Ah, be nice.
And takes today's snowstorm. You know some lady's going to go into labor and need a ride to the hospital for the baby to be born. It's us who takes them. And we make the news too, buddy. We were at the city council Tuesday. That's when Gloria Swenson, she drives for a yellow cab, but she's still okay in my book, went to tell them councilors that women should be able to keep driving hack. They went to work when men were needed in other jobs. They did that in good faith to help the war effort. And contrarian to what some folks say, those women are good drivers, not to mention easier on eyes, you know what I'm saying. Mrs. Swenson gave a petition saying women should drive cab if they so choose to do it, even though the men are coming back. Police Chief Buchanan agreed. He says, why not? As long as it's from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., because women shouldn't be driving after dark. That's just too chancy. Consulwoman Dorothy Banks agreed and got the other councilors to agree, too. So there you go.
Thank you, Driver Bob Curtis of Checker Cab with Taxi Talk. So you cabbies have anything special for Thanksgiving?
You knows we do, Lou Buddy. I was telling you all about it. We're having a big shindig down at the garage.
Thanksgiving dinner in a garage? The black cat turkey roll is sounding better.
Like I said, be nice to the man with the turkey dinner.
Hey, the black cats may have the best coffee and roll in town, but they can't match what we's got going on at the garage.
Sounds like a regular Norman Rockwell piece of America. Let's give Ella Fitzgerald a listen and her big hit, A Tisket a Tasket, on the Martin McKenna Thanksgiving Show.
Tasket, a brown and yellow basket. I send a letter to my mummy. On the way I dropped it, I dropped it, I dropped it. Yes, on the way I dropped it, a little girlie picked it up and put it in her pocket. She was trucking on down the avenue, but not a single thing to do. She went peck, peck, pecking all around. When she spied it on the ground, she took it, she took it, my little yellow basket. And if she doesn't bring it back, I think that I will die. Tasket, I lost my yellow basket, and if that girlie don't return it, don't know what I'll do. Oh dear, I wonder where my basket can be. Oh gee, I wish that little girl I could see. Oh, why was I so careless with that tisket, a tasket. I lost my yellow basket. Won't someone help me find my basket and make me happy again, again?
Was it green?
No, 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 no.
Was it red?
No, 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 no.
Was it blue?
No, 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 no. Just a little yellow basket. A little yellow basket.
Ella Fitzgerald and a tisket a tasket on station KUWS.
You know, cabbies are quite the gourmets. We are always swapping recipes with our passengers. We got chefs and bartenders and church ladies and the like. We are discerning.
This is disconcerting.
You've never had Thanksgiving till you've had it with cab drivers. Get a load of the menu. We got your truckers smoking turkey.
Smoking turkey?
That is a lip-smacking secret recipe we got from the boys driving the big rigs. And crankcase cranberries. Lloyd Mackey makes those, and man, they are the best. We got your crashed potatoes, coolant gravy, yakky yams made by Yankee Doodle himself.
You've got a cabbie named Yakky Doodle?
Yeah, talks a lot compared to the rest of us, but he's a good guy. Cabbie's got to be good yakkers, you know. And we top it all off with piston pumpin' pumpkin pie. You'd swear you'd died and gone to heaven.
Or worry you would if you had too much coolant gravy with your crashed potatoes.
I don't know about you guys.
The heck, I'm going. It sounds too good to pass up.
Sign me up, Bob. Thanks.
Hey, it's what Thanksgiving's all about, giving thanks. Come on, Jack.
Hey, sounds great, Bob. You figure we're pretty lucky here in America. A lot of places hit hard by the war won't be lucky to have crashed potatoes or even dried turkey rolls.
Hey, that's the spirit.
I told you that it'd work out.
And that's it, folks. Stay tuned for the Green Hornet. A special Thanksgiving, Burns and Allen, and Abbott and Costello. We'll be back, same time, same place, on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, and there's no crankcase oil in the crankcase cranberries. For Lou Martin and Rapid Ray, then, this is Jack McKinnon. As Bob says, we have lots to be thankful for this Thanksgiving.
And if we get stuck there because of the storm, I'll even let you borrow my pajamas.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.